Hello, my name is Heiko Hoffmann, and we wanted to follow these presentations with a discussion, but unfortunately we don't have much time left for discussion. So what's important for me is maybe also to give you the opportunity to ask question, but I would like to ask with a question myself, and this is coming back to your initial, or how you ended your presentation, Eberhard. The question concerning the Kraftwerk versus Moses Pelham case, and you were asking everyone's opinion. Should Moses Pelham have the right to sample this piece of metal or not? So I would like to ask you, the audience, maybe you can think about your opinion for a second, and I'll ask you if you think he should have the right or not, and please raise your hand what you think. So the question is, do you think that in this case, Moses Pelham should have had the right to sample the metal of metal piece without asking? Please raise your hand if you do think so. Okay, thank you. I think I counted 13 hands. And who thinks he should not have the right to sample that piece of music without asking for permission? Yes, please a little bit higher. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, I think I counted 7 or 8 hands, so that's about half of it. So that round goes to Moses Pelham. Do you have an opinion yourself, Eberhard?
Well, yes, I did raise my hand, I strongly support the claim that he should have the right to do with the sample. What he has done, although I'm not too enthusiastic about the result that he has achieved, but still he should have the right to do the best that he can do. And any other artist should have the right too. Now the question, why should he have the right? That's, I think, the point we're going to discuss. I think there are basically two arguments that are possible. One is the suggestion introduced by Lionel. Lionel says, because we have already right to quote, and it's written down in the Berne Convention, state law is required to make sure that every citizen and every musician and creator can claim their right to quote and to do with the quotes whatever the practice of quoting includes, and this clearly includes the kind of behavior that we've seen in Pelham and in hip-hop too. So that would be the rights-based approach. And the other approach, and is more conventional, I think, would be, the snippet is so short, it should be regarded as de minimis, not only in musical copyright, as it was regarded as de minimis, sufficient to base a musical copyright claim on it, but also regarding the ancillary copyright, the Leistungsschutzrecht, it should not be possible to enforce such an ancillary copyright for such a short and insignificant snippet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Lionel, what is your opinion?
Is this working?
It is.
Yeah. My opinion is. Yeah, my opinion is that this should be permissible. I could address the de minimis point that directive only requires control of reproductions of parts, and there's a question then about whether this would constitute a part of a sound recording. And again, if you look at the international history, you can see there's an international convention known as the Geneva Phonograms Convention, where the notion of part is recognized, and it means in that context a substantial part. And when the Geneva Phonograms Convention was agreed, the sorts of things that a part was intended to prevent was somebody reproducing a whole track. Okay? Nobody conceived that we might be talking about taking 1 or 2 seconds. So on that level, I think that this is not even something that would be recognizably a part or meaningfully, legally a part of the work. But then it falls, to my mind, within the right of quotation. And the question then is whether it's in accordance with fair practice. And it seems to me that it self-evidently is in accordance with fair practice, partly because there's a very substantial creative, maybe not to all our tastes, contribution from the producer of Noumir. And there's no economic damage produced by using this sample to the interests of Kraftwerk or the owners of the copyright and sound recording.
Tanya? The only quick thing I would add, because I agree in concept in the basic notion that fair use, fair practice would kick in. The only hesitation I have is when I think of one of the four factors which deals with the amount and substantiality that there could be an example of using an entire work and having it still be fair use. Or the corollary to that is that you could take a very small part, but it might be the heart. And so even if you've only taken what would otherwise be considered quite small, if it's the one piece that is so integral and important, that might, now it's just one of the factors, right? Because you still have to go back to the economic consequence, the reason or the character and purpose of use, the nature of the copyrighted work. Some things receive a greater degree of protection. But that's the difficulty of even the discussion, that you don't know until you know, that there's this ex ante determination that we would love to have that we don't. We have to wait, right, until we are in court to try and parse it out. And that makes it really difficult for artists to figure out where they fit in.
And maybe the question is not only to ask if Moses Pelham, in this case, should have had the right to do this without asking, but then also if you think he should have, should he also be obliged to give credit? And should he share some of the profits? And if so, what percentage should that be?
Well, man, that's a lot. That's what people pay $300 an hour to figure out. And if you're struggling with it, you talk to me afterwards. I'm happy to talk with you about it. Yes, that indeed is the question. So, I mean, the short answer would be to the extent that there, well, from a moral rights perspective, because we don't honor moral rights except in very limited instances in the United States, from my perspective, it would be a short no. Now, when you talk about the reasons that people quote, and you want to pay homage, and you want to stay in with the culture and the community, I think you give a nod as a matter of ethics. So we go back to the may, the must, the should. So normatively, if you want to be an active participant in the hip hop culture or whatever your genre is, then you don't want to be an outcast by lifting something and not attributing, even if you're not required by law to do so.
I had two further thoughts about this subject, and it doesn't have so much to do with the court decision, but just two observations is that a couple of months ago, I was having a conversation, not on this stage, but in a room further there with Karl Bartos from Kraftwerk. And what was interesting is that this case is called Kraftwerk versus Moses Pelham, but what it actually is, it's not Kraftwerk, it's Ralf Hütter versus Moses Pelham, who is the sole remaining member of Kraftwerk and the owner of that sound recording. And Karl Bartos was actually the drummer of and partly songwriter for Kraftwerk. And he is the one who not only came up with the pattern, but also played that very pattern that we hear on that song. But he doesn't own any of the rights to it. So I asked him what his perception was, and he was interested in the court case, although he's not a participant in it. But because he's coming from a more classical music background, he was a classical drummer before, he said that he should not have the right to do this. He should just, if he likes the pattern so much, he should just replay it. But that also brings to mind the very, maybe that the whole idea of copyright is a very Western notion of what is there to be copyrighted. And what it is usually a melody and the harmony, but not so much individual sounds or rhythm patterns. And there's so much music, as in hip-hop, electronic music, dance music, where actually the rhythm and the sound is so much more important than maybe the melody or the songwriting. And you raised the point of substantiality, or what is it that makes a song so relevant. And I would say that in the case of Kraftwerk, I mean on Metal of Metal, but maybe the most famous Kraftwerk beat is Numbers, which was famously sampled by Afrika Bambaataa and Planet Rock. And I mean, this song, in that case, it's just a beat, but it's the beat that makes the song. And
it's the reason that they use it.
Yes.
That is so precisely the reason.
These are just two observations I wanted to make. Yes, please, I would like to ask also the audience, if you do have any questions, let us know.
I just want to ask, another point of view is from the creator's view, that until 1970, most musicians played on instruments like a guitar or a piano, and nowadays they are playing on a recording machine. So they are very often using this material as instrument, which is a bit strange, because if we would extend this view, we can say that a Bösendorfer as a piano maker could also claim money from the people who use their sound. Or a Gibson famous, or Stratocaster, you recognize the sound of this famous guitar, and they could say that Jimi Hendrix has to pay, or because he uses his instrument and this special sound. This is when the law was created, this recording rights, there was no use of other recordings to make music, but now the whole creative model has changed, and the law doesn't reflect this at all, and also the discussion doesn't reflect this, in my opinion, because if we go to the way the music is produced nowadays, they use it as kind of instrument. So you can play a song on a flute or with an orchestra, you have a different sound. So this is well known in the classic, and they also use the different kinds of sound for their own music, and this is it's not reflected at all in the law nowadays, in my opinion, or not even in the discussion.
Well, the German Constitutional Court made an attempt to get into this dimension, because they said, we have in German copyright this article on free use. So if you make use of a copyrighted work to produce something which is substantially different from the material that you have used, it does not matter that the material may have been copyrighted for the work it was in another context, but you are free to use it and make something substantially different with it. And this kind of free use is distinguished in many court decisions, minutely distinguished against the class of derivative works that also draw on previous works, but which are still recognizably related to the pre-existing work, so that they appear as a version of the pre-existing work. So an example would be the cover version. The cover version is also, to some degree, creative use of a previous work, but it's still perceived as a reinstantiation of a previously known work. Whereas sampling uses material from sound recordings to produce something that is completely different from the sound recordings that have been used for it. And the result is
can be completely different.
Independent work. Okay. It can, of course, be a mere copy of the pre-existing work, and I would claim in that case it's perfectly okay that the company who owns the distribution rights should also get a part of the remuneration.
Get paid.
thank you. Maybe one more quick question.
I have a question for Professor Bentley. So this whole global mandatory fair use under the umbrella of quotation, how would you envisage that in the European system being implemented? Do you think this would happen through judicial activism by the European Court of Justice, and that we have this potential situation of a semi-open exception system like we have in Canada recently? Or do you think, would this fit in an author's rights system?
Okay, that's a good question. The argument, for those people who aren't familiar, in the United States, for example, we have the fair use system, so a broad exception to copyright that's open-ended. In many of the European countries, the tradition has been to have a whole list of rather narrowly defined exceptions.
Lionel, get a little closer to the mic.
A whole list of rather narrowly defined exceptions. And one of these so-called narrowly defined exceptions is Article 5.3d in the Information Society Directive. And my argument is essentially that is a misinterpretation of that, to see that in the same way as some of the other exceptions and to see it as another of these narrowly specified exceptions is incorrect, and that when you read it in the light of the international norms and the proper meaning of those norms, that quotation exception itself should provide huge flexibility. Now, this depends, as you rightly point out, on the Court of Justice of the European Union buying into that interpretation. And it might be that they do it in this case. It is quite conceivable they don't even address quotation in this case and they just decide it by reference to the part point. But another possibility is they'll reject my view. And then my view remains true as a matter of international law, but they've interpreted the EU quotation exception more narrowly. And then we have to find other ways in the back and forth between member states and the Court of Justice to make sure we're compliant with the international norm. So interpreting, for example, Article 5.3 little o, which is de minimis uses or analogous uses, those kind of provisions more broadly. But it's a great question. If the CJEU decides the Pelham and Hutter case, Hutter and Pelham case, in a particular way, the effect might be to put the EU in breach of international law.
I've got a last question for you, Tonya. And this is, could you maybe give a brief example, because you were ending your presentation with mentioning the possibilities that blockchain could have. So if we would use this technology, can you give an example of maybe how this court case that we spoke about could have been prevented?
Tie it all together. Uh-oh, I have to think on my feet. So if the main legal inquiry for the case is, I'm thinking about how to avoid this in its entirety, because And from the technology point of view, what the technology is good for is making information or data about transactions transparent. And through smart contracts, which is just little bits of code that say, if this happens, then that happens. If my artist sells 1,000 copies on iTunes, then this artist is paid instantly. So those are transactional and objective issues that I don't know that the technology at this point in time can solve for. I think it addresses other problems that can be quantified and reduced to some type of objective determination rather than something that's subjective.
If I understand correctly, the issue that Ralf Hütter had with this piece being sampled is an issue of control. He wants to have control over who uses his music and who doesn't. And there have been numerous cases where he has granted this right, but he wants to be asked. But
so from that perspective, mm-hmm. absolutely. So from a smart contract, so one of the wonderful things that the smart contract technology does, above and beyond tracing and tracking, is also hard coding the if-then, if someone wants to use this track for more than 2 seconds, then they will have to do this. If they only use it for less than 2 seconds, then this. So in that way, you could use smart contract technology, and then there's no fighting afterwards because it will not happen, that license will not issue. There's no access to the recording unless and until.
And what you could also do in the smart contract, for example, is assign the drummer or performer of the track a certain percentage, which automatically through each source of revenue comes then to him.
Absolutely, and all of the artists and contributors, every contribution doesn't rise to the level of authorship, and that's a topic for another day. But at least you would know that there are everyone who participated or contributed but in any stretch of the imagination and what their percentage is, and you agree to that and you code it up front so that there's no fighting about it from an enforcement perspective down the line.
Thank you. Tonya, Lenel, Eberhard, thank you all for coming here today and presenting your very interesting and thoughtful ideas, and thank you for listening. And please, if you're interested, bear with us because in just 5 minutes we will have another talk here on music travels, copy cultures, and the global mediascape, and I'm very much looking forward to this.